You're listening to the B-Fox and B-Frank show. We had the big showdown of the weekend on Big Nude Saturday, and everyone agrees Maserati Marv is the best nickname in sports. I think I saw about a million tweets about that. Gus Johnson just kept trying to make fetch happen. It did not. I will say, though, the one offensive player who seemed to have a strong game in this one was Marvin Harrison Jr. It was an ugly game of football. It was a slog. It was a defensive struggle. Two of the best defenses in the country, to be fair, but the quarterbacks were the victims and did not look good, except when Kyle McCord was throwing to Marvin Harrison Jr. Ohio State gets the win. 20-12, first clash between any of the top three teams in the Big Ten East. I mean, just another year, another win for Ohio State over Penn State. Not really as close as the final score would indicate, honestly. I really did not get the impression that Penn State's offense was capable of putting forth any kind of a threat until it was too late.
Yeah, this was an ugly game all around. I did not enjoy it. I almost hate watched the entire second half. It was, I tweeted it out, but it had, as our dear friend John Rothstein would say, there's a lot of this player and that player. There was a lot of Iowa, Wisconsin in Penn State, Ohio State, and that is not a compliment by any stretch of the imagination. Pure down-home Big Ten football defenses attempting to run the football for Ohio State, averaging under 2 yards a carry there, and bad quarterback play all around. I think Kyle McCord obviously was the better of the two. He also has the best weapon on the field in Marvin Harrison Jr. Cade Stover was a little banged up. You saw him come back in with a knee brace. Buka was out. They're missing a lot of weapons offensively, which I think is still the silver lining if you're Ohio State. And it's weird to say there's a silver lining in a season where they're undefeated, but I still think their best football is ahead of them at this point. The way the defense is playing, it's very similar to Oregon, where, or not Oregon, Utah, where it's going to keep them in a lot of games. And if the offense can just pick up some of the slack, I think they're going to win more often than not. Penn State, I said it last week, I don't trust Drew Aller, and it came true. So they need to figure something out at quarterback. Aller could be the answer. He's young. He's got a lot to learn still, but his lack of mobility was an absolute killer in this game.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's really talking about Ohio State as a national championship team, even though they are undefeated. I mean, they're just clearly the quarterback play is not at the level it's been, and just kind of by proxy, they're less of kind of that finesse football team. They've got a very, very good defense. Maybe that will match up better with Michigan this year. I know that's certainly the goal, but
right,
you know, like it's an ugly 2012 win. You can take away a lot of positives, like 362 yards of offense, not great, but that's the most Penn State's given up all year. Manny Diaz has really reinvigorated that unit since he's come over as the defensive coordinator. Defensively, completely shut them down. Like you said, made Drew Aller look terrible. Until, you know, garbage time. There's just nothing going for Penn State offensively. Their first 15 third down attempts, they failed to convert. So pretty clear to see who was winning that battle when Penn State had the ball. But yeah, I mean, all the headlines are going to Michigan right now. It's almost a reversal of what the last couple of years have been. You know, Ohio State was just blowing everybody out. Michigan was just grinding teams down. So, you know, maybe that's a sign of things to come. But it's definitely a different formula, but same result for Ohio State in this game.
Yeah.
Florida State still undefeated as the rest of the ACC seems to be crashing down. They knock off Duke 38-20. A little surprised, honestly, that Duke was able to make this as competitive as it was for a lot of the game. Pretty impressed from Duke, considering Riley Leonard clearly not 100% ends up getting knocked out of this one. But Florida State, doesn't matter who they're going against, they're going to score points. And going against a defense as good as Duke has been, that's still true. 13th straight game of 30 or more points for the Seminoles, which is just a ridiculous streak.
Yeah, they're looking good. It took a second half performance. Really, the fourth quarter is where it all came crashing down for Duke. It did feel like you were waiting for the other shoe to drop for a vast majority of this game. Like, Duke was playing with some house money, and when they didn't take advantage of a couple opportunities in that third quarter, it was pretty much over from there. Jordan Travis had a touchdown run to give them the lead, and they didn't look back after that. But their best weapon, Keon Coleman, had two catches in this game. He touched the ball twice, and they still find a way to win by 18 against a legit top 20 opponent, a very good defense in Duke, and still put up, like you said, over 30 points in this game. So Florida State is a scary team that I think has started to go under the radar a bit as the noise in the ACC has really died down. Shout out to Miami and Clemson for just forgetting how to play football for a few weeks and making sure that no one wanted to talk about this conference. But the Noles would be a very fun matchup for an Ohio State team that would have opposites attract and strength on strength with that Florida State offense against the Ohio State defense.
Yeah, absolutely. And now the Florida State, they were kind of just win out and you're in. I think it's even clearer now as, the undefeated teams have fallen in the ACC, which we'll talk about later. But Duke obviously would have loved four quarters from a healthy Riley Leonard. They got, 2.5 out of maybe 70% Riley Leonard, just not the same. So it was asking a lot. They battled as much as possible, but Florida State just too tough and too deep offensively, like you said, when Keon Coleman doesn't even have to be close to the focal point and you're still scoring 38 points, there's a lot of guys to spread the wealth to. And that's what Jordan Travis has been doing. Mm-hmm. Alabama, Tennessee. Alabama wins 34-20. Very tough to swallow if you are Tennessee, because they were up 20-7 at the break. Alabama goes on a nice little 27-0 tear after halftime. I was fairly impressed for the most part from both quarterbacks. I know that was a big question mark coming into the game. Joe Milton started off strong. Jalen Milroe probably a little better second half, but this was a lot more scoring than I kind of anticipated coming into the game.
I agree with that. I agree with both points there. Alabama's ability to shut down the run really, really hurt Tennessee, especially in the second half. But Joe Milton was great in the first half. Like, that was a Hendon Hooker type performance for Tennessee's quarterback that has been so tantalizingly close and so has so much potential and the ability to do so many things. He was great in the first half. Squirrel White was awesome as well, aside from having a great name, making a couple of beautiful catches, including that touchdown earlier in the game. But they looked like they were in control. The defense was dominating the line of scrimmage. They were shutting down any opportunity for Milroe to go deep and making him super uncomfortable in the pocket. And then Jace McClellan started to pick it up, and Milroe remembered that he's a very good and very talented quarterback. And Tennessee's offense kind of came crashing back down to earth, where Joe Milton recognized who he was and started playing similar football to what we've seen disappointingly throughout this year. So really, really a great game through, three quarters, I would say, especially if you're a Tennessee fan. It was probably a great half and then nothing else, as they didn't score in the second half. But yeah, it was still a fun game for a vast majority of it until you saw Alabama go down and score in the fourth quarter and realize this game's over.
Yeah, it just completely bottled up Jalen Wright in the run game, which is what Tennessee has been relying on. So it was nice to see Joe Milton kind of take charge and be the leader of the offense and not more of a complimentary piece to the run game as he's been so often this year. But then just kind of the shoe being on the other foot, not getting anything in the run game, really turned Tennessee one dimensional, and they, you can't do that for four quarters against Nick Saban. But even until the late defensive touchdown, it's just a one score game. So they had a shot, but this is, we write off Alabama as dead so early in the season. And I mean, there was a lot of reason to do so this year, especially the back-to-back, you know, Texas and South Florida games. But I mean, they keep stringing these together, and it looks like the West is theirs to lose, depending on what LSU can do the rest of the year. But yeah,
yep.
And it's Nick Saban still here.
He is, and he got to smoke a cigar post game.
For him. Utah USC. This is an opponent that Caleb Williams certainly never wants to see again. He has lost to them three times now in the last 2 years. We finally do have at least some closure on the Cam Rising situation. He is out for the year. So we don't have to keep doing the will they, won't they. But there was some good quarterback play from Utah in this. Third yeah. stringer, Bryson Barnes, and Utah running attack. I mean, this was the USC defense that we had grown accustomed to after, you know, Notre Dame kind of took it easy on them. Utah, who has not been an offensive juggernaut this year, they looked the part for a lot of this game, very well balanced, and really had USC on the back foot for most of the first half. And I mean, most of the game, really.
Yeah, defense, again, looked good for Utah, especially their defensive front late in that game, making a couple of big plays to give them a chance. I mean, this or Utah offense is so beat up. They're starting, their safety is playing both ways out of necessity, basically. Sione Vaki has to play running back a little bit and take some snaps in the backfield, along with third string former walk-on Bryson Barnes, who performed admirably, had that huge run to win the game, getting a huge first down on, what was it, like 3rd and 18 or 4th and 18, whatever. Yeah, it was.
Like it's like the Sam Hartman scramble against yeah. Duke, really.
Yeah, exactly. And then big time field goal kick for Cole Becker, you know, because college kickers are known to screw up from time to time. Utah deciding to center the ball. But yeah, this is, Caleb Williams was okay in this game. I think we all expected a better bounce back performance than this. Granted, it is a very, very, very good Utah defense. It's frustrating if you're USC, because you see the potential of what this season could have been. They're, you know, giving away games, especially in this case, where you get the ball back late, you find a way to score and take the lead, and then give it right back in a matter of 2 minutes. So, unbelievable win, gutsy win for Utah. It's just what they do under Kyle Whittingham, and they are still somehow alive without their star quarterback and best player in the playoff race.
It's crazy. And it is good to see that they were able to hold on to that win, because they were yeah. winning the entire way until USC made a late comeback. And yeah, I mean, back-to-back rough games for Caleb Williams, no touchdowns through the air in this one. But, you know, at least he will probably never see Utah again. And I think we're kind of at the point where we're in the danger zone a little bit of, you know, Caleb Williams was definitely a bit too hyped as the best quarterback prospect ever. Not saying anyone said that word for word, but that was the general sentiment. And now right. after a couple rough weeks, he's going to slide. And I worry that we're like, someone is going to slot him like below Bo Nix in a mock draft. He's like, this is the time of year where like overreaction season runs amok. A couple guys show a little bit of flash. That's how you end up with, you know, Zach Wilson mm-hmm. or Jordan Love becoming a first round quarterback, things of that yeah. nature. Just a couple random names there. But yeah, like Caleb Williams is still a very good quarterback. He has had a couple rough weeks to show he is human. There are definitely Achilles heels in his game, but still a very good quarterback. A lot of credit to Utah here for its defensive performance, keeping him in check.
You know, get Michael Penix into the top five, and then we'll yeah. talk.
If Caleb Williams slides below Michael Penix, I'm fine with that. Specifically, did not want to use his name in the example there.
No, if we start seeing JJ McCarthy above,
yeah, that's
Caleb Williams, I'm going to ram my head into a wall like that. I just don't understand what we're doing.
That's coming. Some front office be like, I don't know what it is about him, and just have some more trust in JJ McCarthy. All right, good, the bad, and the ugly. What was your good from last week?
I'm going to go with Oklahoma State, and more specifically, Ollie Gordon II, their running back, 29 carries, 282 yards, 4 touchdowns, and a big win over Neil Brown's now reeling West Virginia team. This is a better Oklahoma State team than I think a lot of people recognize. They're 3-1 in Big 12 play right now. Alan Bowman has done a great job as a game manager, but the running attack has been nothing short of spectacular throughout the season. It is yet another good running back coming out of Mike Gundy's program. They have won 3 straight, including a sweep of the Kansas programs. And now they get Cincinnati before a huge, huge matchup first weekend of November with Oklahoma in a game. The last bedlam, maybe. I hope not, but maybe. And what a way for them to go out than in a series where they've been thoroughly dominated with an unsuspecting win over a top 10 opponent.
Yeah. I mean, Texas Tech legend Alan Bowman finding a home at another Big 12 school. Yeah, it's Oklahoma's beatable too. They were fortunate to get out of the UCF game unscathed, and it is not as good as UCF has been in past years. Cincinnati looks like a very winnable game for Oklahoma State. The Bearcats are not what they have been either. Unfortunate timing in year one in the Big 12, but Oklahoma State again written
9
off
wins, not out of the question.
Yeah, here. Written off for dead early in the season, but yeah, it's a down year for the Big 12. So if you just take care of business outside of tougher games against Texas and Oklahoma, that is possible now for the fight in Mike Gundy's, which I don't think anyone would have expected 3 weeks ago. So it's pretty remarkable turnaround. And yeah, just West Virginia possibly letting last week beat them twice. Still unfortunate the way that that game ended against Coach Dana in Houston. But yeah, it's a big win for Oklahoma State. I'm going to go with I'm going to give some positive shout out to Big Ten, Big Ten West. I'm going to go with Wisconsin. I unintentionally was watching this game at a Wisconsin bar because I forgot it was one. And Wisconsin was left for dead here, down 21-7 to a resurgent Illinois team, rattled off 18 straight fourth quarter points. The reason this is in the good specifically, the game-winning touchdowns thrown to a 6'8", 300-pound offensive lineman, just some big boy football. Shout out to Nolan Rucci, or however you say his last name.
I think you nailed that.
The epitome of Big Ten West Wisconsin football. Just throw it to the big fella. Almost overshot him, but you can't really overthrow a 6'8 guy. So
yeah,
thankfully did not. But that was a big win for Luke Fickell in year one.
Braden Locke, too, the freshman, getting in on the action with the win there.
Yeah, no Tanner Mordecai, no problem. Well, some problems, but ultimately still got the win. So you can forget about those. But yeah, that is probably the one time Big Ten West will occupy my my good section this year. What was your bad?
I'm going to go with officiating. There were a number of scenarios this week, but two that really come to mind is the horrible spot in the Houston-Texas game that cost Coach Dana a chance to win this game in what was a really fun and competitive battle with a top 10 Texas team that went down Quinn Ewers late in that game. Would have given them a real chance either. And knowing Dana, he probably would have gone for two being at home with the opportunity to win in front of the home crowd. But in the least, would have given them a chance to take it to overtime and win the game. But poor spot on a third down run ended up costing them dearly. And then The Iowa-Minnesota game, maybe the worst game of all time, except for the game that I will talk about next in the ugly, is the fair catch or not fair catch call that cost Iowa a late touchdown and their chance at the Big Ten West. It's not dead yet, but they had a chance to really run away with it and prove to 7-1 and keep a stranglehold on their lead in the Big Ten West. And that all goes away with one errant fair catch call.
Yeah, I had no problem with that. But I did specifically have the Houston call in my bed. It's just an egregiously bad spot. And I know you can say, yeah, they still had a shot on fourth down, but that's unnecessary. Shouldn't be in that situation.
Changes the whole game.
Kind of surprising getting some away cooking for Texas there, but that's what happens when you're. I know when you're going up against the big brand, you're trying to keep them eligible for the playoff for your conference. I know how that goes.
Yep.
But yeah, that was really hard to defend. Just anyone looking at that could clearly see, you know. When you're just looking at what is the yards a gain, he's clearly past that. So we were robbed of what could have been another great finish in a Houston game. But yeah, Texas survives. They were playing with their food a little bit there and then got bailed out by the officiating at the end. Very disappointed to see that. But yeah, that was my bad as well.
I think it was Tim Brando on the call. He was furious. He was fuming.
Oh, he the man always, like, about every topic, just always wears his heart on his sleeve.
Yes.
He was incredulous, as he should be.
It's like it's nice to finally hear. I mean, granted, he's been doing this for 50 years, so he's bought himself leeway to be able to openly criticize officials on live television, but it's nice to see something like that happen and an announcer not trying to defend the officials. Outrageous decision.
Yeah. There were no eggshells being walked on there. So for my ugly, we got to go back to the ACC, an undefeated team. North Carolina, just inexplicable. Gave the first FBS win of the year to the Virginia Cavaliers. Gene Chizik appears to be back in a big way. In no world did I see this happening, but North Carolina's perfect season goes down at the hands of the 2023 Virginia Cavaliers. Just crazy times.
This is a Virginia team that prior to the game against Bill and Mary did not have a single win on the season. They lost to Tennessee, James Madison, Maryland, NC State, and our dear friends Boston College before getting a win over FCS William and Mary.
Yeah, this is the only FBS win of the year, and might be the only one they get.
It's very possible. I am going to take you to some real sicko football. Nevada, who was 0-6 coming into this game on a 16-game losing streak, at San Diego State. Who's 3-4. This game, 6-0 was the final score. Two field goals in the first and second quarter were the only points scored, and that was it. Nevada's quarterback, Brendan Lewis, went 9 of 22 for 98 yards, and he had the most production of any player by a significant margin in this game. Jalen Maiden, the quarterback for San Diego State, was 6 of 14 for 47 yards. The Aztecs ran the ball 39 times for 157 yards. Somehow, there were 10 receivers in this game that had receptions. But this was quite simply the worst football game I've ever watched in my entire life. It was a game that, yes, I did gamble on. I had San Diego State money line in what would have been a very nice parlay win. They start driving down the field after a missed field goal by Nevada, which they missed two in this game. And for one opportunity, they decide to throw the ball after just slowly moving down the field and really taking their time, not showing any sense of urgency despite being under 2 minutes. And the ball at the 25 still. They finally go to throw it. Quarterback gets sacked, strip sack right into the defender's hands. And that's how it ends. 16-game losing streak is over for the Nevada Wolfpack. Our long national crisis for our friends in Reno is done. And San Diego State is officially dead to me. They are the worst offensive team I've ever watched in my entire life.
Did beat Ohio, though. But actually, this was my favorite upset of the week. Had to, had to shout out my brother's alma mater, the Wolfpack. Go Pack, go.
Yeah.
It's not how. It's just matters that it happened. Snapping the 16-game losing streak. No points after halftime. San Diego State, 204 yards of offense against objectively a bad unit. 1 of 13 on third and fourth down.
Yep.
Just Pack pride, baby. But yeah, that was not an aesthetically pleasing game of football. There were several of those. You know, Mississippi State, Arkansas, 7-3 final. That does not happen after the current era of the SEC. That never happens anymore.
Yeah.
And then that leads beautifully into the best thing I saw. Also an ugly game of football, 12-10, but finally, it was the best thing I saw because finally Iowa stopped getting away with its shit. This would have been a crazy win. In like remarkably, they somehow had the better play. Like post-game win expectancy would have pointed to Iowa, which I really don't understand. But PJ Fleck out Iowa'd Iowa because Iowa rushed for 11 yards. They had 127 yards total. And like Iowa fans coming into this game would have told you is like, hey, we've got a pretty big, got a pretty good rushing offense. Like Tom Fornelli has been just out here fighting, being like, no, you don't. You had like 280 yard runs and that's just inflating the numbers. But 127 yards of offense, 11 rushing yards, turned it over three times and still almost won the game.
Yeah.
I took a look at the replay, and objectively, from just an unbiased standpoint, it looks like he did call for a fair catch. But I was not watching in real time, and just the way the timeline was like, either like, what the fuck, Iowa, or a couple sickos still cheering for Iowa to keep being Iowa and go 11-1. And then just the flip when they overturned that was wild to watch in real time. But, you know, if there was a year Iowa could have gone 11-1 with this team, it could have been this year's Big Ten West. I am glad that they didn't. But they still could win the division and lose by a million in the Big Ten championship game. But for one week at least, they stopped getting away with their bullshit.
I really, really, really wanted the storyline of Iowa goes 11-1 and still fires Brian Ferentz because he didn't reach 25 yeah. points a game. That's all I wanted. I didn't really care for anything else. But you know, credit to row the boat, ski you ma. They get their first win at Iowa since 1999, and PJ Fleck reminds us that he was in high school or graduated high school in 1999. So you know, there's a fun little stat for you at the end of that game.
Yeah, I mean it would have been like they still would have fallen short, but they would have been closer to the points per game mark thanks to a punt return touchdown. Again. Something Brian Ferentz has nothing to do with.
It's great.
It's beyond parody.
Best thing I saw, Miami comeback win over Clemson, who is dead. I'm declaring Clemson dead. They're 4-3. This Miami team is not very good. They were without their starting quarterback, Emory Williams, the true freshman, started and found a way to win despite not being very effective back there. The run game was decent. The defense was okay. This Clemson team stinks. I don't know if Dabo is quiet quitting, like you mentioned, or if he's just full-blown out of it. He had the wild comment in his post-game press conference talking about the sports psychologist on the team that said he needs to be put on suicide watch, which was just next level Dabo being Dabo. But yeah, what is happening in Clemson? This team is horrible. The coach is gone, and at least mentally he's gone. And I don't know what to expect out of this team for the next few weeks through the season. They've still got NC State, who can at least score, which is more than you can say for this Clemson team. Notre Dame, Georgia Tech, who was an absolute wild card, and then North Carolina and South Carolina. Like they could legitimately lose all those games. Do I see them losing to NC State and Georgia Tech? Probably not, but they could lose all these games.
He's quiet quitting slash just the most stubborn coach in America.
Yeah.
Like just completely refusing to adapt or make any changes. Like the reason Saban is Saban is because he's been able to adapt
right
every step of the way. Like he won with just like the way Purdue just produces big men in a lab. He just produced the same, you know, white game manager quarterback for a decade and just beat people 17-13. College football changed, became more offensive, became an absolute juggernaut. He embraced NIL. Dabo, the strength of Clemson was the continuity, being able to develop guys in the program. Now you need to, their free agency exists. You need to adapt or die. Clemson is dying. They are not adding transfers. They just are not doing the quick changes that you need to do in an offseason to improve your team. They had sort of a down year last season. Most schools, especially most top schools, would be pretty active in the portal. Oklahoma was pretty active in the portal, made some important additions, especially on the defense, and they have turned around what was a middling team from last year.
Mm-hmm.
Dabo doesn't do that. This is what happens when you don't embrace what college football is now. And you can say, you know, you wish college football wasn't this way. That's a completely different conversation. The reality is Clemson didn't adapt. They just are not going to be able to get back to the level that they were, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's close to over for Dabo. Like, he's not going to get fired, but he's just not going to be going undefeated every year anymore.
That leads to my next question. Who lasts longer, Dabo or Brad Brunell?
Oh, God.
It's a tough one because Brad's been dead like 8 times already.
You put Brad Brunell in a win or go home year, he'll win.
He will.
You put his feet to the flame, he delivers. It's incredible. Every time we write him off.
For this Clemson Clemson football team, let him coach the first couple weeks of the year. He'll have the offense humming.
If it's like a down by 5 or 6 last drive, just let Brad Brunell call the plays. Like he'll deliver. But that is a fascinating question. I don't know. I think like Clemson just does not care about basketball, but every time they every time they're like, "Hey Brad, buddy, like you've sucked for a couple years now, like it's probably going to be your last year." They get a 5 or 6 seed in the NCAA tournament. but yeah, like I don't think, I don't know. It would have to be just complete disaster for a couple seasons to fire Dabo. You could argue that this season is a disaster. I don't know if we're there yet because they still could, you know, get 9 wins. But
yeah,
it's going to have to be lowered expectations for what a good season for Clemson is. Maybe people don't accept that. They probably won't. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's what, you know, just restlessness in the fan base. And if he's still doing the same shtick that's terrible and has always sucked, and you're also not winning games now, so now people are less understanding of it. So I mean, I love to see someone like Dabo not be happy. And
this is
also
a big week for you.
Games. Yeah.
Iowa goes down and Clemson.
It really helps just distract from the fact that Indiana just shit the bed against Rutger, but we don't have to talk about that.
I was not going to bring that up.
No,
I was thinking, though, that you were just an Indiana win over Rutger away from it being maybe the perfect week.
No, I was already in hell. Just for right off the bat, the 11 to 2:30 window is just, you know, Same thing as Michigan, really. Like one scripted drive that looks great, and then everything else just.
Yep.
Yeah, it's Rutgers quarterback had no interest in throwing the ball, and Indiana's defense had no answers. But yeah, other than that, great Saturday. Great Saturday. All right. Favorite upset? I talked about mine already. What was yours from last week?
We already talked about it. I took Virginia over UNC.
Okay.
Just unthinkable coming into the day.
That is for sure. Okay. A little bit of a reprieve next week. There's only two ranked games. Game day, of course, is going to be in Salt Lake City for Oregon, Utah. That's got some juice to it, certainly. No more will they, won't they with Cam Rising, but doesn't really change anything for Utah. They've been kind of in this situation all year. They have certainly made the most of it. At home against Oregon, who do you like here?
Everything is telling me to take Oregon, so I will take Utah. I don't know. I don't know that I can expect Bryson Barnes to do what he did against USC to this Oregon defense, who is better than USC. But it is a home game. This Utah team is exceptional at home. Defensively, they are rock solid. They're going up against a very good offensive unit and Bo Nix in really a winner-go-home game for both of these teams in terms of both the Pac-12 and the playoff. So when the going gets tough, I take a walk-on quarterback over Bo Nix, a guy who has played the most, or who has started the most games of any college quarterback of all time. So that tells you where my head is at. I'm taking Utah and not thinking twice about it.
Yeah, and just the Bo Nix tests that come out are just crazy. Like his first collegiate start was against Justin Herbert, who is not a new quarterback to the NFL. Everything's telling me to take Oregon here too, so I will. The only thing that gives me pause is just playing at Utah. Never easy.
Yeah.
It's not a night game, so that makes it a little easier for Oregon. But yeah, it's just Oregon is just too good on both sides of the ball. They are a very balanced football team, really tough in the trenches. You're not going to get any freebies like you might in the run game against USC. So I think it's going to be a lot tougher for Utah offensively. And Oregon's offense is just going to be a little too tough. It can't truly be a rock fight that Utah would probably want it to be. So I'm going to take Oregon to get the win on the road here. Louisville, Duke. Louisville is still a team. They just are very thankful for UNC for having a more embarrassing first loss than what they did against Pitt. But Duke reeling a little bit too, just because Riley Leonard re-aggravating that injury late in the game, or in the third quarter at least, in the loss to Florida State. So a couple teams not feeling too hot right now. Who's able to get back on track here?
I have no true sense in this game. It's very hard to read without maybe Riley Leonard, maybe some snaps, maybe tries to play most of the game. Certainly not 100%. Plummer is just an absolute enigma at quarterback for Louisville. He's got almost 2,000 yards passing right now, but he's also a 13-8 touchdown to interception ratio. The best unit on the field and in this game is the Duke defense, and that's who I'm going to take. Duke's defense gets the job done. They're going to be an opportunistic group against a quarterback that is not known for ball security and has been loose with his passing game in the past. If they can get a couple of short fields, I think they can put some points on the board and make this easier for a hobbled Riley Leonard or backup quarterback, whoever ends up getting the nod. So I'll take Duke in a close game.
Take the words right out of my mouth. The only unit I have any kind of confidence in or can trust is Duke's defense. You have no idea what kind of team is going to show up for Louisville. And that's not just the last two games. That's just every game of the season. The Notre Dame game is really the outlier because they were walking a tightrope of, looking at rosters, overmatched teams. So it's Georgia Tech, Indiana, NC State, just really waiting for disaster to strike. And surprisingly, it didn't until Pitt. They played really well against Notre Dame, took advantage of a defense that was getting turnovers, ran the ball down Notre Dame's throat. But I haven't really seen consistent performances like that. As weird as it is to say, you almost want to throw out their best win. But yeah, it's the opportunity is certainly here at home. Riley Leonard probably not playing. But honestly, at this point, I would probably take a healthy backup over Riley Leonard, who's clearly not himself and isn't really able to be mobile as he likes to do or likes to be. So I'm going to go with Duke here as well. I think it'll be a low scoring game, or it'll have to be for Duke to pull off the win. But I think that's going to happen here. I think Plummer is going to have some questionable decisions that end up resulting in turnovers, and Duke's going to be able to take advantage.
I will say, if it gets to the 20s, I am concerned for Duke.
Yeah.
I think that Louisville wants to live in the 20s and 30s. Duke would love another Clemson game game or Notre Dame.
100%. Yeah, they would kill for a Clemson game. All right, that'll do it for this week. We will be back next week to talk about some more college football and maybe start thinking about basketball season. We are only a couple weeks away. Recruiting things are happening. Looks like Kansas will be good, but we will talk about the country as a whole in the coming weeks as we lead up to the start of the season. Very exciting times. So we will see you next week.